Thanks for choosing Felger and Maz to entertain.
Includa, including Intuka, trying to smash it into one word.
And inform you in the afternoon.
Tuca puked on his pad.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Smart tried to miss it on purpose, and he makes it rattled in. So the Sixers are going to get a look here. Down by two with 2.4 to go here at the end of game five. Simmons holding it. Long touchdown pass. Knocked away. Picked off by Marcus Smart. He fires the ball into the air. It crashes to the ground as the Philadelphia 76ers season comes to an end. An instant classic of a series in a rivalry renewed. And the Boston Celtics have survived 4-1.
There's nothing to be said about that other than what a play by Marcus Smart.
Maz, you're already scoffing at Grandy's distinction there as an instant classic?
Instant classic, game five in a 4-1 series. That's an instant classic.
You think last night was a good game?
It was a terrific game.
Last night was a terrific game.
It was. Excellent game. Easily the best game of the series. Instant classic?
Eh, a little strong.
Instant classic. It's when we look back in the annals of Celtic history. Gee, you remember that? Yeah, do you? Yeah, do you remember that year they beat the Sixers 4-1? Game 5 was good.
Now, to be fair, if this becomes
the rest of the series sucked. Yeah, but Game 5 was a bond burner.
But, Maz, if this does become a legitimate rivalry, like it looks it's going to, between these two teams over the next 5, 6, 7 years, well, now you have the starting point.
Yes, exactly. I'll give you the starting point, Murray. That was a terrific game. And the reason it
too
was
bad the rest of the series wasn't like
oh,
that.
Oh, God, exactly.
Well, wait a minute. The first game in Philadelphia was phenomenal. That was very entertaining.
It wasn't as well played as last night.
No, last night was easily the best played game of the series. And I was just about to say, the reason it was a good game, because Philly showed up. Like, to me, I knew the Celtics were going to show up for Game 5. I didn't have any doubts about that. But Philly showed up. They played a good game last night. The Sixers played easily their best game of the series. They lost it. It was a fabulous game.
So what stood out to you?
I mean, I'd say, the whole thing, really. The one thing that I thought was noteworthy in the series, I finally felt like Brett Brown coached a little and Philly made some adjustments. And really, it started in game four. But if the Celtics are going to give you twos in the paint, go get the twos. Go get all of them. Go get every one of them. And having McConnell in there, again, to sort of take some of the pressure off of Simmons, take the ball out of his hands, worked perfectly. Simmons was able to get the ball near the basket. All of it. Like, I thought Philly actually had a game plan. They had an approach. They had an offense. All of it. Like, to me, that's what stuck out. Like, okay, there you go. That's the Philly team that I thought you were going to get. In the whole series, you didn't, but if it's the one you get for years to come, then it's going to be great to watch. It's going to be great theater to watch that.
Tatum and Brown stood out to me. I mean, Tatum to me was the best player in the whole series, but Brown last night, too, was like ice water in his veins.
Was it 10 of 13?
Yeah.
Something like that.
If anything, I don't think they went to him enough, especially in the fourth quarter, but anytime he got it. I mean, got a couple of mishandles, but that's somebody he has to continue to work on, but he was excellent in that game. And the both of them, really, I think, especially Tatum, you saw him get better as the playoffs have gone on, and especially in this series. So this is why I think, like, if you want to get into this upcoming series now, I do think it's going to be more competitive than last year's. I mean, this is a better team, and I think those two guys are at the forefront of it.
Well, Celtics have a real shot. And we have, 2 days to talk about it, but let's try and just focus on last night. To me, my main takeaway, big picture, Maz, is, like, I sort of get now, and I always understood it, but I thought it really applied in this series, and really last night too, is this, well, like, the phrase that a player is a 3-and-D guy?
Yeah.
Meaning he can shoot the 3 and play D. Or
absolutely.
You've got guys who can play on both sides of the floor, or these guys that the Celtics have drafted can play on both sides of the floor. Isn't it really accentuated when you play a team like Philly? So Philly's got to put out guys like McConnell and Redick because they need shooters, because their point guard can't shoot, so they need those guys for the offense, but they're totally exposed on the other side.
Correct.
And Celtics just absolutely emasculated Redick and McConnell defensively. Just back them down, back them down, back them down. And to a lesser degree, Ilyasova they could pick on.
Saric.
They picked on all these guys. They just pick. Where's Redick? The first half was ridiculous. Like, I felt Brett Brown had to take him off the floor, but then who's he putting in? And so, like, you really see Philly has to choose. Is it a defensive player? Is it an offensive player? And their offensive players just get totally schooled. And the Celtics don't have quite that problem.
No, they have great versatility is what they have.
And well, they're guys that play on both ends of the floor.
That's what I mean.
You know, other than Kyrie and Rozier, who's a liability on the other end of the floor?
No one, really.
Anyone?
No, I don't know that there is one.
And Rozier is actually representative. I mean,
he's okay.
He made a play on Embiid on the last possession that helped seal the game. So Rozier can, at least he's not a total disaster.
No, he doesn't have size, but he's pesky. So, defensively, Rozier.
I mean, think of all those guys on Philly that they'd...
One end of the floor.
I mean, Redick is one big Olay after another.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah, he can't play D. But this is what I felt at the beginning of the series. Philly's got mismatch problems. They have mismatch problems. Or matchup problems. You know, because what do you do? Where are you going to hide these guys? You can't. The Celtics have too many guys that if you leave them open, they'll exploit it. So this is how they've built the team, that they are hard to defend, because who do you go to? Like, where can you slack off and they're not going to burn you on it? Like, even Baines in this series was able to go out and make some shots, and I'm not telling you want to live that way. But, you know, he's not a complete bricklayer from out there.
Unless he's wide open. Did you see the one that was the end of the third quarter?
That hit the side of the backboard?
The top of the backboard?
Oh, God, it was horrendous.
That was awesome.
Yeah, it was horrendous. But really, again, on the defensive end, he gives you something there. I mean, he's a big body. He's tough to get around. So he's not a complete zero at that end of the floor. And Philly had some matchup problems in this series because a lot of their guys can only play one end of the floor. It really, and most of them are offensive players. All their shooters can't play D. And the Celtics don't really have guys like that.
Well, it just took Philly way too long to engage in the
series. Oh, God, way too long.
Play it at the proper level and just all of it. And if Philly had brought that from game one, maybe you would have had a, you know, all-time classic or whatever Grandy said there. One for the ages. What did he say?
Instant classic.
Instant classic. Instead, it was really just one game that was like that. And it was terrific. It was the whole way through.
Oh, great game all the way through.
You know, and I also, you know, Philly, again, is going to be kicking themselves. They had a lot of makeable shots down the stretch that they just... There were, you know, three that stand out to me. Obviously, Embiid and Baines on that last possession. Now, that would be to tie. But that's, you know, Embiid down that low against Aaron Baines. I know who's a good defensive player, but, I mean, you're talking about the franchise there, 2 feet from the cup.
Very choky.
Whether he got fouled or not, choky.
Oh, yeah, no, you got to put that in.
Then there was little T.J. McConnell there, little Skippy Magoo, had one in the last 2 minutes where he did this a lot, where he would dribble baseline and then do a quick little semicircle right underneath the basket, like just sort of playing around through the trees. But he somehow got open where no one was around him, and it was, again, a three-footer right there, little chip shot, and it rimmed out. And then the one that I starred, the one that I think was the biggest miss of the whole thing, is
Redick
on a three-ball.
Yeah.
It's Philly plus two, about a minute and a half left, and he comes around a screen, and it's just wide open. And it wasn't just that he missed, it's how he missed. He shot it different than any other shot. Like... He made a three later on to sort of bring him back on that last possession.
The one way out top.
Yeah, where he nailed it. It was the typical arc and rotation in the J.J. Redick shot. Go back and watch his wide open three plus, you know, up 2 points with a minute and a half left. It was a low liner that was a quick release, like get rid of the ball. And it's like...
Short-armed it.
It's not a choke because the Celtics got a little frantic there at the end too. And so things sort of my pressure burst pipes. And I just think Philly had it. They're up 4 points with a minute plus left. And they had several possessions where they could have really put it away. That Redick shot, you're plus five with a minute and change left. And that could be the ball game. And it was unlike any other shot that he released the entire series. And it was because it was the game and it showed. And this is why the Celtics, you know, they had some of those moments too, except they kept going inside. They were all alley-oop to Horford, you know, driving layup by Tatum, or Tatum miss, Marcus Smart follow. Like, that's what all their baskets were. They weren't hitting, at the very, very end, those weren't jumpers.
No, they went to the basket.
They were right there?
Yeah, they went to the basket. And I would say that, you know, Tatum missed one of those.
He did. Some smarts right there.
I mean, so, and they missed some freebies again, some free throws. Like, so there was some of that going on both ends, and I just think it was the nature of the game that with that kind of, you know, with that sort of pace, those sorts of stakes, you know, the clock dwindling down, all of it. And I mean, it was, you know, there were some big ones too, like that three Saric hit.
Oh, yeah, huge.
That's a big shot.
I thought he was their best player last night.
Jaylen Brown had a couple.
Oh, yeah. Those are big shots.
I ask you every day, Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum?
Tatum.
Brown.
I mean, you really can't go wrong with either.
I ask you every day, Marcus Smart or Terry Rozier?
Smart.
It's hard to not say Smart today.
Smart.
Rozier was garbage last night.
Rozier
and Marcus Morris were brutal for the Celtics last night.
I mean, I am buying into the whole Marcus Smart intangible factor.
How do you not?
It's impossible to ignore. It really is. Every single time there is a play that doesn't show up on the stat line, he's in the middle of it. He's in the middle of it. One way, even as something as relatively small as that final length of the court pass last night, he's the one who picked it off. He just, at that moment, you know he's going to be there. You just know. And he's a hard guy to quantify. You know, the shots drive you crazy, all of it. But the competitiveness, off the freaking charts with that guy. Just a hard guy to ignore when it comes to those spots.
Okay, it was a great ball game. Obviously a big win and a lot of stuff to bask in. So we'll bask in it, Green Teamers. Right to you after this.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Yeah, I'm not going to talk about this very much more.
Joel Embiid will jump it up against Aaron Bain. Celtics going for the closeout. Game 5. Jaylen Brown misses both free throws. Covington is going to try. Deep 3. Got it. Robert Covington gives Philadelphia the lead.
That was a big misses on that free throw line.
Horford turns on Sarge. One dribble. Double team comes. Shoots over it and banks it in. Ben Simmons down the middle of the floor. Finger roll. Bounces in. Sixers have their largest lead now, up by 4. Tatum attacks the paint, lobs it for Al Horford, who throws it down with 2 hands. And this time, the Celtics not only score, they score quick. Tatum, right-hand dribble, gets away from Simmons, attacks the paint and misses the layup, but Marcus Smart is there to make the play on the inside. Offensive rebound put back, and with exactly 1 minute to go in Game 5, we are tied at 109.
Lean up, bow to catch a bottle exploded.
Sarge turns to face on Smart. Bumps him twice, bumps him, knocks him over. Ball is free and Horford pounces on it. Tatum catches, keeps it away from McConnell and scores off the window. Ooh. And Brett Brown does not want to use his last timeout until the ball comes across half court and he will use it now. Embiid bumps him, gets in deep, pulls it up, no good, scramble for the rebound. Embiid has got it, knocked away by Rozier. Out of bounds off Embiid, Celtics ball.
Wow.
And Embiid crashes to the floor, his hands over his head.
There, Rozier came on the backside and knocked that basketball away.
Redick fires the deep 3. Got it! And Brad Stevens will call his final timeout. Long touchdown pass. Picked off by Marcus Smart. He fires the ball into the air. It crashes to the ground as the Philadelphia 76ers season comes to an end.
Whew, man. The things that Marcus Smart is able to do, crazy.
Your seasons are on the line, and when you're in the playoffs, and when you've got to do really hard things, he can do really hard things.
Stevens on Marcus Smart. Smart or Rozier? Probably have to make a call on that. Pete in Delaware, Smart or Rozier?
Oh, God. It's not, you know what? Not even close. It's Marcus Smart. I watched him intentionally last night. I mean, just watching him go around the court. He is just in the right place at the right time. His instincts are really just off the charts. And I don't think that's something you can just find in a player. It's just, I was blown away by him. Now, offensively, he still scares me. And one mistake last night, guys, when Smart took the ball in with a few seconds left, what is Al Horford giving him the ball back? He just missed all those free throws. I jumped out of my chair, but luckily it worked out.
Yeah, that was not the guy to get the ball in the inbounds.
Agreed.
Not the guy. Murray, why did Rozier bug you last night?
I mean, it was just one missed shot after another, it felt like, and then he had the rare turnover in the fourth there that went off of his knee. It just felt like he was tight. It wasn't a good game for him. Him and Morris offensively were terrible last night.
I mean, he was 4-for-15, and Morris was 1-for-10.
What was Smart?
Smart was 3-for-8.
See, the thing is, I mean, that's a good shooting night, I guess.
8-for-13 from the line.
Free throws sucked. But he shows up so many other places. And it seems like he shows up more when he's missing because he feels he's got to compensate or something. I don't know. Like, we've given you all these crazy numbers. where the worse he shoots, the better their winning percentage. And, like, they just make no sense other than you feel like, well, when he's missing, he feels he has to dive on the floor, and so you get even more of that Marcus Smart thing when he's not hitting. Last night you got both, and
I always go back to that first Golden State game this year that they won here, and he didn't hit one shot the whole game. But he might have been their best player.
I'm telling you, if you suck, I want Terry Rozier because you need scoring and he can score. But if you're a good team, I'd much rather have Marcus Smart.
I mean, and I would say based on value, now's the time to move Rozier.
Sell like, high, you
yes,
bet.
Yes, yes. So in terms of maximizing your assets, the better thing to do would probably be to move Rozier.
Here's Vlad in Haverhill. Yes, Vladimir.
Okay, I'm afraid to move Rozier because I don't know about the knee with Kyrie. And then Smart, you can't get rid of Smart. That guy got so much energy, and he is the glue of that team with Al Horford. But my call is to laugh at Mass. Did you see the stare that he gave Rozier, the scary Terry, when he stripped the ball from the Giant that he couldn't even touch his face the last game? And then when he hit the ball, he was looking at him right in the eyes. I could only think about Mass when that happened. Oh, my
okay.
God.
Vlad, good volume on your phone, but I couldn't understand. I don't know what you're saying.
Rozier making that play on Embiid.
That's what he's talking about, yeah, Embiid, yeah, right? Embiid. Yeah, and look, so what bugs me about Rozier is describing yourself as making a championship play.
So we'll play that cut in a little bit.
Oh, my God, please. The second you start doing that, you're a loser.
If he had said series-winning play, would you have felt better about it?
No, I wouldn't. Don't say anything about it. Just say, trying to get my hand in there and disrupt it. That's it. Let everyone else glow and rave about it. Now, that said, again, he's pesky, too. He plays hard. So they all do. That's one of the real beauties of that team. They all play hard, so they're hard not to like.
Here's Moose in Middleborough. Hi, Moose.
Gentlemen, I'm your ideal caller. No pleasantries, 1 point, now gone. You're all admitting that the Celtics are a better team this year compared to last year. I ask you this. Did Toronto team and Toronto Raptors talk radio make all the same comments about, boy, we're a better team. We finished first. We got a great chance against the Cavaliers 4 games a week.
Okay, so you're not my ideal caller because, again, your phone kind of sucks. And I don't understand his point.
Me neither. I don't know his point either.
Well, Toronto's bench was deeper. DeMar DeRozan had found the three. He had been facilitating more. They seemed like they were a better matchup for LeBron and the Cavs this year as opposed to
the folks in Toronto were saying the same things we're going to say this week, which is the Celts are closer and have a chance, and look at what happened to them.
Yeah, look, I like Cleveland in the series. I'm not telling you that the Celtics are going to get wiped out like Toronto did. Toronto has no sack. That team has no sack, and they never have.
Cleveland's minus 275. I don't get Vegas. I don't get you people. Like, how wrong can they be? And, like, I think they continue to be in that the Sixers were minus 375. And the Sixers were favored in every game of the series, including all the ones in Boston, including last night.
Right.
So the Sixers were favored last night, and the Sixers were minus 375, almost 4-1 favorites. The Cavs are 3-1 favorites, minus 275, and game one's a pick 'em. So Vegas is telling you that Philly had a better chance than Cleveland.
If Philly had played the whole series like last night, they might have won the series.
Might.
Yeah, they probably
would. Who would you say
has
a better chance of winning, the Sixers or the Cavs?
Cavs.
So what is Vegas talking about?
No idea. I think they've underestimated the Celtics, really. Because, again,
Vegas has underestimated the Celtics. The national folks have underestimated the Celtics. The TNT crew underestimates them. The ESPN crew underestimates them. And I'm not coming from your whiny Boston fan place. Like, ESPN, yeah, I'm not that guy. I'm just, like, I would like to agree with these folks. Because in my heart, I don't really like the Celtics. So believe me, I'm not coming at it from your place. But I look at it, I watch it, I listen to it, and I say, the national media doesn't get it. They don't get it. They don't get you. They don't understand the Celtics. And they truly, really underestimate the Celtics. Like, all the way through. It blows me away. They don't get it.
Because, again, it's so, what they're doing right now is so out of the ordinary and unconventional in that league. It really is. And maybe that's what it is.
Well, because to say they have no stars, they have 2 lottery picks out there. So, like, I mean,
But with a combined 3 years of experience.
Right. I mean, that's true.
So it's just, see, this is why I think that they defy logic. Because their young guys play older than they are. They're like a college team. With the terms of the intensity and the energy they bring, No NBA team plays like that all the time. None of them do. They go from wire to wire, the full 48, frantic all the time, giving you everything they have. Really, it's like it's amazing that they are able to play at that pace all the time and in the regular season.
Local fans always say this about the Patriots, that you know that you don't get respect nationally. No one, and that's just so wrong. People don't like the Patriots, but they totally respect them and totally think they're going to win. Okay, so like you just have that narrative wrong. The thing with the Celtics, though, really exists. Like, you listen to Barkley, you listen to Jalen Rose, you listen to these guys on ESPN, you listen to these guys on TNT. Like, they don't get it.
No. And I am starting to buy into this whole thing now, finally, of positionless basketball. Because they really do play it. They're a matchup nightmare.
Well, no, what I get is the...
Credit to Coach Stevens.
On both ends of the floor is what I get. When you watch Philly and you've got three or four guys who just... cannot defend.
Defensive liability.
And you just can pick on Redick and McConnell and Sarge and Ilyasova and guys like this and pick. And the Celtics don't really have a guy like that. They don't really. Like, that's the thing I get. I'm starting to get. Also, the coaching, Matt in Rhode Island. Go, Matt.
Great game last night. It's crazy to watch them play.
I can't take the phones. I can't. You got a million people waiting to get in, a million people to talk. If you're going to call me on an iPhone, you've got to talk like this with the thing to your mouth. Do not talk with it out here.
Can't hold it like a traditional phone receiver.
Don't hold it like a traditional phone. Hold it like this, parallel, perpendicular, whatever this is. What is this, perpendicular?
That is perpendicular to
your
mouth.
You hold it perpendicular to your mouth and you speak into this. You can't listen.
Like you're going to eat the bottom of the phone.
Okay? And then you give me your take for 30 seconds and then you can listen. You can't talk on a cord. You can't talk on a Bluetooth. Call on a landline, but I can't take those phones. I can't do it.
Right. Can we just isolate this and even with the video aspect of it too and just put it online as
this
a public service.
This is how you speak into a cell phone. Like
let's
this.
Tweet it.
Yeah.
Perpendicular to your mouth. Perpendicular. Right angle. Okay? The phone is like a bed on your teeth. Okay? And you speak into the bottom of it like this. You don't get to listen. So there is no back and forth, which is why I implore you, Maz, do not ask questions of the callers.
Don't feed the animals.
Don't talk or touch or feed the animals. Just let them do it. It's like a zoo. You walk by, you see them for a second, then you move on to the next one. So you're going to talk for 30, 45 seconds like this into the bottom of your phone, and then we're going to respond. And that's it. Okay? I can't take those phones.
So we're having one-way conversation.
Yes, this is not a conversation. It's you talk, I talk, and then we move on to the next one. Love you, mean it. But please.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
I like Antetokounmpo. Stupid. They're so stupid. 98.5 Sports
Hub. I always feel incredibly empty. You know, you wake up in the middle of the night tonight and you're like, no. You know, you'll do the same tomorrow. It doesn't go away easy. You know, you learn at the stage that I am at with age and experience that I hate losing more than I love winning.
3 days is plenty of time to prepare. You know, it's not like they've never watched Cleveland before. We played them in the Eastern Conference Finals last year. LeBron's on just a ridiculous run of play. And, you know, we know that it'll be quite a challenge. But the most important thing that our team can do tomorrow is go outside and get away from it for a day and take a day off and take a deep breath. We're asking a lot of the 8-7 guys that played a ton tonight. They're going to keep playing a ton. And then we'll reconvene on Friday, Saturday, and really go to work on how we want to play on Sunday.
So there are your two coaches after the game. Are you rethinking the Sixers as a team of the future in the East, Mass?
No.
I am.
I'm not.
So they have issues. Their coach is one. If he's going to be bumping heads with Brad Stevens every year, I don't like my chances with Brett Brown. Took him way, and his nerd team, his analytics team, took him way too long to figure out some things in this series. Way too long. That's one. Two, I understand some guys come in the league without their shot, and I understand Magic Johnson wasn't a great shooter when he got there, and et cetera, et cetera. But Ben Simmons, to me, feels so far away from having a shot that's even just representative. It's not even funny. And his numbers in this series were freaking scary. You were just going over them. How much better the Sixers were when he was off the floor versus on the floor.
So Simmons for the series was a minus 63. Okay, after two games, I think he was, or minus, after three games, he was minus 55. So it's actually been a little bit better at the end. But he was a minus 63 for the series.
So it's over 10 points a game.
When he sat, they were plus 48.
I mean, that's a huge, like, you know what a gap that they have to do to close that?
Sure.
And so to compensate, they had to put in a little point guard who couldn't defend, who got absolutely picked on defensively. And so it's like, well, that's the way to live. Yeah, I mean, Simmons can't shoot from 8 feet, never mind 12, never mind where you have to in that league. He's not even close. That's a huge issue.
Sure.
Minus 63 for the series?
Yeah, minus 63. I'm not telling you he played well in the series. I'm just telling you there's a lot of ability there, and he's a unique player. And so, again, you got a 6'10 guy that can handle the ball and pass like that. What if you moved him to a different position?
I'm saying, it's maybe better. Like, what good is 6'10 if you're a point guard and you can't shoot? Like, I don't know. If he's posting up or playing a different spot, then there's value there. But who cares? I don't care how tall you are if you can't shoot.
No, that's right. And the other thing is, like you say, Brett Brown, problem. You can always fire the coach. So I just look at it and say, Embiid and Simmons is a good place to start.
Give me the Embiid number and clutch and late. Who had this? Was this Jimmy Stewart? Who?
Oh, yeah. Give me 1 second. I'll pull it right up. I mean, I didn't know you were going to call for it, but, you know, this is what happens every single time.
Yeah, no, I mean, what I would do is keep the interesting stuff up.
Okay. Yeah, but I'll just keep opening pages.
And interesting is defined by what Felger feels in that very moment.
Well, no, this is a good number. Like, Ben Simmons minus 63 is obviously an interesting, telling, insightful number.
See, I have a very good memory, so I just remember it when I see it.
Here we go. Yeah, so Joel Embiid went 0-for-8 on game-tying or go-ahead shots in the final minute this season, including 0-for-2 last night, and his 8 such attempts are tied for the most by any player without a made field goal under those circumstances.
So that's when I would just keep up.
Sure.
So he's 0-for-8 in that spot?
Yes, big.
And he looked, it wasn't just that he missed, it's how frantic he was down there. The way he handled that whole possession.
That was very telling.
On Baines. There was, I don't know, 12 seconds left when he had all the time in the world. And he did it the whole game. He was great. Mid-range was there. He'd take it. He'd take his time backing you down. Watch him on that possession. The chicken with his head cut off. He's frantic. And there was plenty of time.
No question.
The whole thing sped up on him.
Yes. So
it was like what we saw with Simmons in game 3 with that layup. As soon as it touched his hands, he was like, I got to put it up. Rather than holding on to it, looking around, trying to kick it back out.
See, but I just think you're overlooking one thing. He had 31 career games before this season. Like, the guy hadn't played a lot, and neither one of them had ever been in the playoffs. So I'm not telling you that they're both a finished product right now. They're not.
Well, Tatum didn't gag at the end.
Okay, but Tatum's a rarity, Murray, especially in the modern NBA. Like, the idea of a Larry Bird or Magic coming in the league and doing it with the way they did it back in the 80s, maybe it was a little more common. Now it almost never happens the way Tatum does it.
Well, so here's another thing. Jim in Somerville. Go ahead, Jim.
Hey, guys, how you doing? I just want to weigh in on the Marcus Fultz, Jason Tatum debate here we got going on. How could the Philly front office possibly take Fultz as a guard after they just wrapped Simmons? They needed a big three guy. You get Saric at the 4, and you got Embiid at the 5. He would have fit in there nicely.
Just flip that. What if Philly takes Tatum?
Oh, huge difference.
So now I look at the Philly decision-making, but it's really not about Philly because the whole league, Fultz was a consensus guy. He was the consensus guy.
This one's about Ainge.
Not just Philly and not just, I mean, that is the majority of the league would have taken Fultz.
And remember, too, that there was no indication that Fultz was a mental case shooting in college. Like, that one sort of came out of nowhere. Like, what the hell happened there? I'm just telling you, don't count Philly out.
I'm just beginning to wonder if the whole Philly process is a complete fraud. That they've just been picking at the top of the draft now for 5 or 6 straight years, and they hit on a couple guys. And that's all that happened. They've done nothing else. There's no coaching per se. I just saw it over 5 games, up close and personal.
What'd you think about it last night? Did you think there was a system there last night?
Yes, I think that but it took them way too long.
Sure.
It took them way too long to sort of figure it out. The coach totally botched a couple games. So, like, I mean, I don't know what's going on. I feel there's more of a process here than a process there. Let me tell you that.
But they're also farther along in the process here. How many years has Stevens been here now?
No, Philly was tanking before you started.
No. When I say farther along in the process,
I think Brett Brown's been there as long as Stevens.
No, but you're misunderstanding what I'm saying. I'm saying that the Celtics have been to the playoffs how many years in a row now?
Because they've made better decisions.
Okay, in part. They've
started from roughly the same place.
Okay, but was that team last year a team that you were going to win anything with?
The Celts? No.
Okay, so they just were plugging in veteran guys because someone else was tanking for them. They had Brooklyn there to tank for them. That's why.
I don't know, man. It sounds like you're getting take defensive over here.
I'm not getting take. I just think, look, last night, Philly gave you all you can handle.
Philly needs help. If they don't get LeBron or Kawhi Leonard or someone like this, they won't amount to anything. So that's when you can clip. Unless they make a big trade and get or a free agent signing or whatever. You know, I know these idiots were talking about, we don't need any help. This is the team. Well, good luck with that. You're a 6'10 point guard who can't shoot from 4 feet.
But what were the Celtics before they got Kyrie?
Okay, so this is what I'm saying. Fine. Fine. I'm talking about Philly. Unless they get LeBron or Kawhi Leonard or something like that, they won't win jack.
Okay, and that might be right. But again, the whole idea is to get enough good young players where someone looks at you and go, you know what, I'm going to go play over there. I'm going to go play with that guy.
Okay, so let's see. If they get those guys, then maybe game on.
See, I also think that Embiid could be a franchise-altering talent. Maybe not Simmons, but Embiid could.
He could be, for sure.
What Embiid needs to do is stop looking for fouls all the time. You're 7 feet one or 7 foot or whatever the hell you are. You're 270 pounds or whatever you are. Bowl him over and dunk the ball. Watch some Shaq video. Stop looking for the stupid fouls.
We're getting to the Red Sox and the Fortnite thing later on, but Colin is calling me right now. I don't want to keep you on hold for an hour and a half. Just give me your quick Fortnite take, Colin.
Maz, you're completely right. It is not just the Boston Red Sox that have a Fortnite problem. There's a video going around of Felger's beloved Brewers sitting in the field boxes playing Fortnite on the Jumbotron in center field.
Do you know why the Milwaukee Brewers do it, Colin?
I don't.
Because they're losers. We're losers. We've never won anything. We don't get it. Of course the Brewers are doing it. Of course. We're losers who don't get it, who have, like, of course, the Brewers would do it. Yes, absolutely. My point yesterday is, do the Yankees do it? Are the Yankees letting their guys carry on with the stupid video games like the Red Sox are or the Brewers are or any other dumb team? And that's my point. I need to see evidence that the Yankees have allowed their players.
Mike, the Yankees are playing Fortnite.
Like this?
Well, what do you mean like this?
Not on the big screen.
On the scoreboard in center field like the Brewers?
Okay, but are they going back to their hotels on the road trip and guys packing Xboxes? I bet yes.
Are they doing? Are there pitchers floating around in the Yankees clubhouse with guys like you showed me yesterday with David Price with the headset on in the clubhouse?
That was Murray's picture.
With the headset in the clubhouse. Show me Yankee pictures of that. Because I bet you if there's a team that's not falling trapped to it like others, it's the Yankees.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz. You're listening to Felger and Maz.
Doesn't always have to be ha ha hee hee.
Oh, love it.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Ben Simmons walks it across half court. Horford down in his defensive stance. Embiid sets the screen. Simmons creeping in. Bumps Baines away. Throws a bounce pass to the cutter. McConnell kicks it all the way out to the open. Redick, his three is no good. Rebound Tatum pushes it towards the corner, but it was knocked away. Last touch by Embiid. And the Celtics will get it, somehow surviving a wide open three from J.J. Redick.
Well, you talk about J.J. Redick getting opportunities, and he's had them.
And to me, that's the one, that's the miss that stands out. That's where Philly had the game. They're up two. Okay. Up two. So here's a sequence real quick. Remember the Saric hit that he sort of threw over his head?
Yeah, yeah, but he got the ball right under the hoop.
Okay, I think it was over smart. He got right under the hoop and sort of overhead. That put the Sixers up four with a .135 left. Celts came right down, alley-oop to Horford, made it a two-point game.
It was a big play.
Huge. Okay, so now it's a two-point game. Sixers come back down, so I don't have the exact time in front of me, but call it a .120, .115, something like that.
The shot went up at about .110, I think.
Riddick is wide open.
Wide open on the left elbow.
Wide open, perfect shooter spot. They're up two. That goes in. They're up now five with a buck, you know, five, whatever. And I won't say that's the ball game, but oh boy, that's pretty close to being the ball game. And I just thought that was, of all the misses, I thought the Sixers had three misses down the stretch. McConnell had a little bunny in the lane that he missed. Obviously, Embiid on that last possession versus Baines. But to me, that's the one. That's the one the Sixers and Redick are going to be thinking about all offseason. Oh. Wide open.
Well, and then and a guy who is, you know, I mean, one of the best shooters in the league. He might be one of the best shooters in the history of the league, for crying out loud, when you really look at it. He's a sniper. And wide open, I'd be willing to bet in practice he makes that shot 8 or 9 out of 10 times.
Oh, no question.
I mean, maybe 10 out of 10 the way he shoots. But like, and in games, I bet you that shot is over 50%.
And as we said, he shot it different. He shot it different than he usually shoots it. It was just the moment. He knew it. He knew the game was wide open. He knew it. And you know, sometimes you see it, right? You see it a lot, where the guys are worse when they're wide open versus when there's a guy in near them.
Go ahead, sorry.
You saw it with Aaron Baines. I mean, that corner three that he threw off the top of the backboard, there wasn't anyone within 10 feet of him.
Too much time to think.
Right. And so there it was. And that was the series. That was the game. And that's the one. I'm kicking myself if I'm the Sixers. All right, back to your wonderful phones on good cell phones and landlines. Ben in New Hampshire. Go, Ben. Hello, Ben. Okay. I told you, I said you were going to be good, and you let me down. Jason and Lowell. Hi, Jason.
Hey, how you doing? Can you hear me okay?
Yes, go ahead.
All right. I don't have a landline, so this is all I got.
Just go.
All right. So between Terry Rozier and Marcus Smart, last night I made my decision after Marcus Smart could possibly play for the Patriots after making that last catch. He should take over from Malcolm Butler, I think. But after seeing his grittiness, we have this team healthy, has enough offense that it will make up for Marcus Smart's deficiencies on the offense.
Exactly.
I think we need to keep Smart, pay him, whatever, and then use Terry Rozier as a trading chip if we have to. But the other thing is,
I'm going to stop you there because I agree 100%. 100%. Sell high on Rozier. You'll get a better return for Rozier because he's going to have better offensive numbers and people will put value on that. Marcus Smart fits you better as a role player, as a defensive guy, energy guy, all the stuff that he does, your junkyard dog, every team needs it. You should be able to pay him a little less because his offensive numbers won't be there. And I think he's just, I mean, again, when Hayward and Irving are added to Tatum and Brown and Horford and everything else you have.
Loaded.
I mean.
Yeah, they're not quite Golden State, but they might be the second best team in the league.
So, like, do you need another high-scoring point guard? No, you need someone to sort of fill in the gaps, and that's Marcus Smart. The only thing I will disagree with that call is the last play. People are overrating that last play. Would you please?
No.
That was a home run, Hail Mary, and there were four Celtics in the area. That was not the brilliance of Marcus Smart. He knocked the ball away from Saric on their second-to-last possession where he was getting back down. The follow-on, I mean, I'll give you a dozen plays that Marcus Smart made that were more important and higher degree of difficulty than that last, you know, freeze. That was Dewan Harmon getting a balloon, a fair catch punt at the end of a game. Like, please, that was nothing.
I mean, I thought the follow on the Tatum miss was ginormous. I mean, that's a layup. You can't miss that if you're Tatum, and he did, and Smart came in and followed it up while everyone else is standing there as usual.
The free safety play, please. That was nothing. Joe in Rosendale. Hi, Joe.
What's up, boys? Hey, I think Marcus Smart should try to intentionally miss his shots every single time. You know? I
mean, they go in.
You know? How's my phone sound, by the way? It's been a bad phone day today. I'm trying to yell for you.
No, it's good. Keep going.
All right, beautiful. Listen, last time LeBron was in Boston, and he wiped his butt with Pierce's banner on his jersey night. Listen, I need the Celtics to win this series like I need air to breathe. I can't stand that bald bozo. If I see him in the NBA Finals, I swear to God, I'm going to jump in the Charles River with my cement shoes on. And I can't deal with it. I'll sell my wife's soul to the devil to get past this guy.
It's not saying much. Murray.
It'll be a more competitive series than last year.
Last year was a freight train.
Yeah,
coming
freight
your
train
way.
Coming your way. Hey, chugga chugga. Surprised they didn't get swept.
This year?
Cavs and six.
That's where I am too at the moment, but if you told me this puppy's going seven, I wouldn't put up a big
fight. So going into the playoffs, and especially because I watched a lot of that first series because I actually thought that Indiana really had a legitimate chance to knock them off, and their defense was still iffy. I mean, they were one of the worst defensive teams coming into the playoffs. You look at what they did to the Raptors. I don't know. I have to take it with a grain of salt because it's the Raptors, and they're gutless. They had a complete no-show in Game 4. Lowry had 4 points, I think it was, in Game 4, and they did a really good job on DeRozan. So, I don't know. That kind of feels like fool's gold to me, the way that they just swept Toronto, because it's the Raptors, and they suck.
Toronto quit. I mean, they lost the first two at home. That was over. The other thing is, honestly, I think people are underrating Indiana. Indiana's pretty good. I mean, they won 48 games this year. They closed in on 50 wins. Oladipo's a fabulous athlete.
But you look at
plays both ends of the floor.
Look at some of the guys that were defensive liabilities for the Sixers in this series, like Saric, like J.J. Redick. I mean, Cleveland's fraught with these guys. They have Kyle Korver. They got J.R. Smith. I mean, there's a lot of guys on that team that have been a disaster defensively this whole season. So, I don't know. I mean, the bigger sample size is that they weren't very good defensively. I have to think that that catches up to them in this series.
Celtics should be able to take it to six.
Give me Celtics plus 225. I mean, if you're telling me it's a pick 'em, I guess I'd have to go LeBron. I mean, pick it and stick it. But if you're going to give me odds, I mean, if I'm going to be a 2-1 or 3-1 underdog, give me the money.
Like as good as
give me the odds.
As good as defense that the Celtics play, I refuse to believe that Kevin Love is going to play as well as he did in this last series. Oh, Kevin Love's found his stroke. He's found his game here. You played the Raptors. As gutless a franchise as there is in sports. They literally, Maz is right, they stopped trying after two games. They really did.
I'll tell you, if I'm the Celtics, I would think about doing it the same way I did with Simmons early in the series. LeBron wants to go to the basket, let him go. Let him go. Give LeBron his points.
Let him get 45 a night. I don't care.
Cover the shooters. Don't give him the threes. Make sure Love doesn't get going. Make sure some of the other guys don't get going. You know, and if LeBron wants to get 50, let him get 50. It's not going to be solely, but LeBron's going to need some help.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.